In Jesus' grand commission to the disciples after his resurrection and before his ascension, he said to them, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the day, end of the age." When we look at this statement and its often connection to be the Great Commission, there is for us things that we often perhaps babble about in an application about the text, while we miss the primary point, I think, of what Jesus was saying to the disciples. Noticing it first of all in verse 18, that everything that they're about to engage in and all that would be set before them would come because Jesus says all authority had been given to him. That in a very real and clear sense, since he was about to send them into the world to make disciples, he established in this statement with clarity who truly was the master. If there would be disciples, there would have to be a master. And Jesus says, to him by his Father has been given, to him all authority. So then he says in verse 19 that those apostles who were being commissioned with this function to declare the message of the gospel, that they would make disciples of all the nations. So it's interesting to make this point that when we talk about disciples and discipleship, we're not talking just about necessarily and only the aspect of you deciding to follow Jesus, although that's part of it. It's also recognizing that Jesus put into motion in this declaration the process that disciples themselves would engage in making other disciples. And that if the process is to continue in the way that Jesus intended it to, that the only way disciples could ever be made is if the disciples themselves, as they're teaching other disciples, establish with clarity what verse 18 says. Jesus is the master. And the only way Jesus can make disciples in our world is if disciples make disciples. It doesn't come merely by us handing out Bibles or soliciting tracts. It doesn't come merely by us creating little 3-minute videos that appear on the web randomly across the world, although every one of those aspects amplify the opportunity for the word to be spread. But what Jesus was putting into motion was the idea of discipleship would come from humans. Jesus was the master who would teach this group of men to be disciples. And that group of men and women who would be disciples would teach other men and women to become disciples. As soon as we depersonalize that process, and as soon as we dethrone the master of his rightful place in the process, we no longer make disciples. So tonight I want to look at 5 passages that talk to us about discipleship. How Jesus caricatures the role of being a disciple with if clauses. If you, then you find out exactly what it means to be a disciple. And what these passages will also illuminate is what it really means in being a disciple all the time. Because what happens when we come to that passage in Matthew 28, verse 19, I'm one of the greatest offenders, is that we look at this passage that Jesus sent the apostles to go into all the world and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them. I'm intentionally emphasizing that. That all we look at that verse as being a declarative statement that baptism is essential to salvation, and that's not the point of the words that Jesus made. It identifies the beginning point of that walk as a disciple, but the passage is about being a disciple, not becoming a disciple. So what is it that Jesus says we should do? Look in John chapter 8. In John chapter 8. Beginning in verse 31. Jesus therefore was saying to those Jews who had believed in him, or believed him, "If you abide in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." One of the most famous, I suppose, statements Jesus ever made, and emblazoned on Hallmark cards and emblazoned upon some people's Bible covers. It is one of the most famously known texts that Jesus says. But what Jesus says is that if, then you can be my disciple. If. And so when we recognize that first statement, if, Jesus is telling us something. That it's conditional. That being a disciple is not what you want to call yourself, but being a disciple is what we are in reality. And the statement that Jesus makes here in verse 31 is very clear, that he says to Jews who had believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are truly disciples of mine." That statement raises a lot of questions. Number one, what does it mean to be, as the New American Standard words it, truly my disciples? Truly. Number two, he says, "If you abide in my word," he says that. Then he also says, "If you abide in my word." And then he says, "If you abide," what does abide mean? What does it mean to be Jesus' disciples truly? Well, first of all, by him putting that word in there, that tells us that there are disciples of Jesus who are not truly his. I need everyone to hear that again. That there are disciples of Jesus who are not truly his. That means that people can declare, "I'm a disciple of Jesus," and Jesus will say, "No, you truly are not." Because it is in Jesus' own words that he says, "If you abide in my word, then you are truly my disciples." You remember at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7, he says those famous words, verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons? And in your name perform many miracles?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" So there is a discipleship then that is merely decorative. There is a discipleship that Jesus described here that is not actually real. It is a pretend life, pretending to be on the outside what we are not wanting to be on the inside. And Jesus says, "Truly my disciples are the ones who will abide in my word." Then I want you to notice that second question. If you abide in my word. I don't know that I have with clarity the absolute statement here. But it's interesting to me that Jesus doesn't say, "If you abide in my words." He says, "My word." So he collects together all of his words and everything that he would call mine in that collection. So he says, if you abide in that collection, then you are truly my disciples. Now, the truth is, Jesus will tell the apostles that everything that I've said to you, you won't necessarily remember, but the Holy Spirit, when he comes, he will deliver to you all truth. John chapter 14, verse 16. I'm sorry, verse 26. I'll get it right eventually. Just need to look at my notes. But what is Jesus saying when he says, my word? I've thought about that an awful lot because some of the things that Jesus expects the Jews to believe in the time that of which he speaks are quotations from the Old Testament. That they're to believe in those words so that they can come to believe in Jesus. And so I believe that what Jesus is saying, unless you abide in my word, then you're truly my disciples. I'm not sure he's trying to distinguish his word from the Old Testament. Even though it is true that the apostles make that clear distinction in their writings to Christians. And it is clear that when Jesus came, he came to establish a new covenant. And he distinguishes the work and the responsibilities of Christians as growing out of that teaching that Jesus brought. But when Jesus says, you are not my disciples if you don't abide in my word, I think Jesus is making the absolute statement, the sum of everything that I have ever said, you must accept. And remember, it was Jesus who was there when the world was created. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And it was God who said, let there be light. So we have to accept Jesus and everything from him, everything about him, and everything that points to him. That's what I think Jesus' point is. Unless you abide in what I say, then you cannot be my disciples. Then he says, you must abide. You must remain there. It's not the idea of carrying on and moving on, but that is where you must stay. You must stay where it is Jesus has told you to be. Abiding means that we're only going to be persuaded by the truth that comes from him. We're only going to be attracted to the beauty and the value of his words, and we're going to be willing to rest ourselves in that grace and the power of his words and walk only where he asks us to walk in the light of his word. And what I'm talking about is this very simply. Why do churches change? Why do churches change? Is it because the Bible comes out in a new version? I remember once I was in a congregation where some visitors had come to visit us, and they wanted to make sure, I may have told this story before, but they wanted to make sure, and it wasn't here, that they wanted to find out what translation that we had in the back of our pew. And so they inspected to make sure, and they noticed that we didn't have all the same one, because the church where I was didn't buy a uniform version to go in the pew. And it just so happened that they had quite a few King James, they had some New King James, and they had some American Standard, and they had some New American Standards. And apparently they also found a NIV, New International Version. And those visitors said, oh, you know, you can't have that translation in this building. And I said, why? And he said, well, where we are from, I won't tell you the city, where we're from, the progressive church on the other side of town, they bought NIVs and they put them all in the pews, and within a month that whole church was believing in Calvinism. Please don't tell me you think that that's possible. Especially since the New International Version was written long after Calvinism ever existed. And the truth of the matter is, in the 1800s and the 1900s, even among brethren, the views of Calvinism was infecting and affecting the way many brethren would think. The New International Version is not the cause of false teaching. It's people who don't want to abide in my teaching, Jesus says. If we're ever, forever looking for new things and fun ways to look at things, or if we're ever, forever trying to find new angles and new switches to look at things, then the question is, we have to ask ourselves, are we looking to be illuminated, or are we looking to be distracted? And turn our ways from what it really means to abide in my teaching. And the truth of the matter is, does the word abide suggest an idea of comfort? My home is my abode. It's very hard for me to think of my home as my abode if I'm forever trying to get out of it. Right? So why sometimes do I find Christians, in the broad sense of the word and sometimes in a very biblical sense of the word, not wanting to abide where Jesus has taught us to be? If you will abide in my word, Jesus says, then you are truly my disciples. Then notice John chapter 13. In John chapter 13, the second if that we consider, one that you know so well, one I love to talk about an awful lot. And Jesus begins in verse 33 to the disciples, saying, "Little children, I am with you a little while longer. You shall seek me as I have said to the Jews, but I say to you also, where I'm going, you cannot come. So a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And by this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." With the same kind of strength Jesus' own words should convey to us in the text that we just read, if you abide in my word, then you are truly my disciples, then certainly it would be true that Jesus would place the same amount of emphasis on the manner in which we portray ourselves to the world by the way that we treat each other. If you have love for one another, then will the world know you are my disciples. And notice that's the testor that Jesus places. The test that Jesus puts in that verse is that then, by this, all men will know that you are my disciples. Jesus doesn't say, then God, my Father, who loves you and cares for you and watches and knows everything that you do and knows your heart and knows your motivation and knows that you really didn't mean to let that word slip out against that brother, by this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. That Jesus says that the way I act around everyone matters. And that's hard. It's hard. But Jesus says that this discipleship call that he has brought me into, as he has joined all of us in, is that he has compelled us and modeled for us this great love that we can have for other people, if we'll only walk the way he walked. And that's a big if. If we love one another, then the world will know we're truly his disciples. Then I want you to look at another passage in Mark chapter 14. In Mark chapter 14. I think I have my verse written down wrong. Yep. And then the preacher has to prove himself. But let me come back to that point. Look in Luke chapter 14. I can see now what I did wrong. Luke chapter 14. Notice beginning in verse 25. It says, great multitudes were going along with Jesus, and he turned and he said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down, calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who observe it will ridicule him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Jesus makes application upon application on the premise of the distinguishing reality of how our life is lived as disciples by saying that if you come to Jesus as his disciple, you must hate father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, even yourself, your own life, if it's going to get in the way of you being a disciple. That is, if your allegiance to Jesus trumps your allegiance to everyone else, including yourself, then you will not be a follower of the world, a follower of your family. You'd be a follower of Jesus. You've placed your allegiance where he is. You've understood that he truly is the Lord of all glory. He is truly the one, Matthew 28 and verse 18, who has all authority in heaven and on earth. And you are manifesting that in your life. And you are showing that you love him more than you love father, mother, brother, sister, son or daughter, or even yourself. So many times when people come to the religious conversation, they say, I just need to be true to myself. And I like to think that the truth of that statement has validity. That God has never asked anyone to be dishonest with himself. God has never asked anyone to close their eyes to the truth of a real matter. But the heart can be deceptive. And so Jesus' point is that if you've put other things in front of him, if your allegiance is not to him alone, but to him plus all these others, then you cannot be his disciple. And notice verse 26, those two words. He cannot. Now, if I was Robert Turner writing in Plain Talk, cannot would be two words. Because he would say, he can, space, not. I don't know if there's any kind of English rules about all of that. All you English grammarians, y'all can answer me. But Jesus' point is clear. It's not possible. To allow the loyalty to your family above Jesus and really be truly a disciple. Just as there can be fake disciples who say they are disciples but don't abide in his world, just like there can be fake disciples who really don't love their brothers, here are fake disciples who love family, relationships, and their propriety and themselves more than they love Jesus. And so Jesus makes this last point, verse 27. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot. And it reminds me that while we look at the metaphor, the figure of speech, carrying the cross, leading yourself to your own death, not necessarily describing the burden of your own personal crisis, but rather carrying your cross even if it brings you to death. If you cannot take that challenge to follow Jesus, you cannot be my disciple. Every person within earshot of this statement would have known exactly how important those words were. But every time today Christianity is declared and the call to follow Jesus is placed in kind of words that you have to obey him. You have to listen to his words, and you have to surrender your will to his will. That as soon as those accolades and those statements are sung over and over again from pulpits, there are pulpits that all over the country will tell us, well, that's not the gospel. But yet it is the words of Jesus himself who says that if I'm not willing to follow every instruction that Jesus wants, even if it is to carry my own cross to come after him, I cannot be his disciple. You see, Jesus sometimes was negative. He cannot be. Because Jesus wanted the positivity to happen with the people who were willing to be the ifs who would truly be his disciples. So the last application turns to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. So if we abide in his word, Jesus says, then truly we are his disciples. And Jesus says, if we have love for one another, then we'll be seen by the world to be his disciples. If, he says, you love father, mother, brother, sister more than me, then you cannot be my disciples, stated negatively. And then he says here, the passage we just read, if you cannot bear the cross and come after him, you cannot be my disciple. But I want you to think about it, this last passage. In Jesus' response, verses 31 and 32, we already read. Notice verse 33. They answered Jesus, well, we are Abraham's offspring and have never yet been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say, you shall become free? Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is the slave of sin. And the slave does not remain in the house forever. The son does remain. Therefore, if the son will make you free, then you will be free indeed. I know that you are Abraham's offspring, yet you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. And I speak the things which I have seen with my father. Therefore, you do the things which you have heard from your father. And you know the rest of the story, where Jesus, they say, well, Abraham's our father. And Jesus says, not quite. But Jesus makes a statement in verse 36 that I want you to think long and hard about as we conclude. That if I'm a disciple, I'm going to abide in the teaching of Jesus. If I am a disciple, I'm going to have love for one another. If I am a disciple, I am not going to put allegiances to anything else or anyone else above my allegiance to Jesus. And if I am a disciple, I'm going to be willing to carry my cross wherever the Lord wants me to, because I am a disciple of his. And if I am a disciple, verse 36, I'm willing to let the Son make me. If therefore the Son shall make you free, you will be free indeed. Because in that statement, Jesus challenges and explodes the concepts of the Pharisees' ideas that if we just keep that law perfectly, or if we just recognize who we are, we're God's chosen people, we're special in the history of humanity, we are the people of God. If we think that's what sets us free, we're wrong. And sometimes Christians in our modern world place their connection to God's blessing to their family history or their family tree. Well, I've had gospel preachers in my line for umpteen generations. Well, that's really good to hear, but does that change your relationship with God? Sometimes people say, well, you know, this is the way we have always done it. And sometimes I remember One place I worshiped where it was almost as if that the traditions that they were going through, they really believed were the traditions of the apostles, the way that they served the communion. The question is your tradition divine? And finally, this is the last application to this verse. What do you think really set you free? From your sin? From your guilt? What is it that really set you free? If you're a disciple of Jesus, you are thrilled to say, the Son. I'm willing to acknowledge that God's Son is the one who set me free. It is not a tradition that has come down to me because of my family. It is not a tradition that has come down because some special elite have told us and taught us that this is the way things should be. I have been set free from my sin. I have been set free from my guilt. I have been set free from the tyranny of death because the Son set me free. Pharisees couldn't say that, and they could never be disciples. Can you surrender your history and your tradition? Can you surrender your arrogance and your self-reliance? Can you surrender everything to be a disciple of Jesus and let the Son set you free? And then you truly can be His disciple. If you're subject to heaven's call, we plead with you to come as together we stand and as we sing.